Our next speaker is John Zirkle from the University of Vermont.
All right. Thanks for letting me speak. It's an exciting room to be in with all the cover crop and wheat research going on in here. Today I'm going to talk about some of my thesis research, underseeding wheat with clover, looking at implications for Fusarium head blight, mycotoxins, crude protein, grain yield, and weed suppression. Here's a quick outline. I'll go into an introduction of the work that's going on in the University of Vermont and the Northeast, the experiment. I'll go over some of my 2010 results, some 2011 results, and give a quick summary. So just as an overview, University of Vermont and University of Maine are working on a USDA grant addressing barriers to organic wheat production in the Northeast. And some of the barriers we're looking at include variety selection, soil fertility, weed management, economic issues, and crop disease. And as a grad student, I was able to work on a sub-area of crop disease within this project. And we also have partners through the grant in Quebec and Denmark. This project also has some SARE funding as well for a further trial of this experiment. But so the number one barrier for wheat production we find in Vermont right now is a fungal disease, Fusarium head blight. We have a lot of moisture in the Northeast, and here's an example of the evidence of wheat scab, as it's also called, a few weeks after anthesis. This was actually from 2010 in a soft white winter wheat field. The disease, if you're not familiar, produces a mycotoxin, deoxynivalenol, which above one part per million restricts human consumption. And so that's kind of a barrier for our growers. And the disease also can reduce yield and test weight, and there's implications for protein interference as well. So this is the basis for my project, is looking at disease management of wheat scab. But when I started my program here, I was going to some of the local meetings where I found out that some growers are underseeding clover in organic wheat in the Northeast. And recognizing some of the other benefits, as others have mentioned today, with having a living mulch under the clover. But it raised a question for me, how does that interact with disease levels of Fusarium head blight? And does a clover understory affect disease levels? Kind of a sub-area, I think, within intercropping that may not have gotten as much attention on the disease side. Secondly, are mycotoxin levels in the subsequent wheat in a wheat-clover system significantly affected compared to monocropping? And furthermore, how does it affect other agronomic questions we have in terms of yield, crude protein, and weed suppression? So in 2010, I had six location sites. Three of them were winter wheat, three of them were spring wheat. And this year, I backed down to two spring wheats and one winter wheat site throughout different parts of Vermont. And these represent some different microclimates as well, this being a very cool, mountainous, isolated area, as well as the middle of the state, and these being Champlain Valley, warmer areas of the state. So my experiment involved five treatments using two types of clover underseeding, using a medium red at 14 kilograms per hectare and Ladino white, large leaf, again at these two different seeding rates. And with winter wheat, if you're not familiar, it's often frost seeded in March, in the Northeast at least, spread onto frozen ground, and the seed naturally works in the heaped soil. With spring wheat, it can be planted simultaneously, which is what I did. My experiment, I have a complete randomized block design that I used at all locations, 6x6 meter plots with alleyways of sole crop and monocrop wheat. By the way, there were six replications per site. So in one case, there was four reps. And spring wheat trials that I did, I focused on one variety to keep things simple and test these parameters in different locations using AC Superb. So here's an example of frost seeding and preparing the winter wheat site. And one trial actually involved broadcasting on with spinning. And here's an example of the manure that we prepped for the spring wheat planting at the UVM Research Farm. So the experiment, the measurements we took, here's a list again. Things I haven't mentioned as much in detail, the weeds I collected, the weed, clover, and total understory biomass within this system, and also did a botanical composition to break down the ratio of weeds and clover. I'm not talking about this today. It informs my thesis. I'm going into more detail on the fusarium splash dispersal of fungal spores in a wheat clover system. I won't go into that. More plant pathology than this session involves, but that was a significant part of my research. How do we calculate fusarium head blight? It's a incidence question. Does it have premature bleaching? Yes or no? And here's an example of how we quantify severity, counting the number of spikelets per head and giving average numbers. So this example, it's about 64% infected in that head. DON test, deoxynivalenol, are done with an ELISA test at the UVM serial testing lab. Here's an example of how that's done. So back to my research questions. Does a clover understory significantly affect head blight in subsequent wheat crops? So for 2010, here's my data from the three spring wheat sites. And in one location, there were not significant treatment differences in fusarium head blight incidence, and slightly different results in two other locations where the control with no clover had significantly lower head blight incidence compared to some of the, this is the double rate of red clover. And in this instance, in this location, the control, the no clover actually had more disease incidence than at least the white clover at the double rate. The winter wheat sites was the same. There were no significant differences in the winter wheat sites between treatments. Severity, weren't significant differences. I will point out in one location, pretty much a significant difference between the no clover and the white clover at the double rate, which is interesting. My next question, are mycotoxin levels, in this case deoxynivalenol, significantly different in wheat clover intercropping or monocropping? In these six locations, only one site showed a significant difference between treatments. And as you'll note, it's not between control and the clover treatments, it's a clover to clover difference. So bottom line, I'm seeing at least in 2010, we're not significantly increasing or decreasing mycotoxin levels and deoxynivalenol at least with underseeding. And so far, I don't have 2011 data to show, but I can say that there are also not treatment differences that I've found so far in 2011 as well. And to answer the question of impacts on yield in wheat clover intercropping, there were significant differences at one location. Again, it's not between control and clover, it's a clover to clover interaction, which I'll explain my thoughts on that in a few minutes. But generally finding that there's not an increase or decrease in yield with underseeding at these rates, which some would consider high seeding rates for clover underseeding. How does it affect grain quality like crude protein and wheat suppression? Well, for crude protein, again, only one location out of three of the spring wheats had differences, but again, not between control and clover treatments. And just to go back to both the crude protein and the yield, for this Champlain Islands location, again, those differences are between these two different seeding rates of red clover. And I think the sheer volume of biomass that I'm going to show that was generated in the higher seeding rate from red clover probably detracted from moisture and potential nutrient pulls in that system that competed with the wheat. Weeds as can be expected, were kind of a shining star and were significantly suppressed, at least in two of these locations, in some cases in an order of magnitude of five times the reduction in weeds biomass compared to regular monocropped wheat. I will point out this one location had high weed pressure in 2010, I think due to some pretty weedy manure that was spread that the clover was not able to overcome through the season. And to show you a total biomass of the understory in these systems, as you can see in all three of these locations, the monocropped wheat definitely had less total production compared to these clover underseedings. And as you can see, comparing the red to red, significantly less weeds biomass in all clover treatments. And treatment effects, just wanted to show there were not interactions except at weeds biomass, which I think was an example of that one particularly weedy site. But grain yield and head blight severity, if you accept the 0.1 level, were fairly significant across the study. But in general, location was a bigger effect than a lot of my treatments. And some of the locations in Vermont, one of them is surrounded by corn production, which is a host crop for Fusarium pathogens to live in that stubble. And so the treatment effects of clover underseeding may be overshadowed by areas that are loaded in the air with spores from corn-dominated systems, etc. Whereas some of the locations were very isolated in mountainous areas of Vermont that weren't overwhelmed with disease pressure, probably. And just to further explain the differences in the years, we've had very different weather years. Last year was a relatively dry year, but we actually had a fairly wet June, which happens to coincide with the critical disease window for wheat scab. So even though this year has been dramatically more wet, we've actually had less disease levels than we did last year, which seems counterintuitive to some folks. But we had a not that much rainfall this summer, though a number of small rain events, which is still tough on disease and drying issues. So in summary, head blight severity incidents were not consistently increased or decreased due to underseeding, nor was DON concentration in the grain. Yield and protein occasionally show differences, but that's probably more of a function in location differences and soil type and fertility issues. Also in this past spring when we had an extremely heavy rain, one site that was sandy, we think, was pretty leached with all the rainfall from the spring applied manure that went on. So definitely reduction in protein and yield. And in general, weed suppression was very significant across locations. And finally, something I didn't go into in depth, but something in my thesis I'm very interested in is further researching the variety of Fusarium pathogens that can cause scab that are potentially in the Northeast that may be unique compared to other parts of the Northwest or the Midwest that are more commonly studied. I think we have unique climatic conditions, but thank you, and I'll take questions.
Thank you, John. We have time for a couple questions in the back.
Yeah, no, farmers that are using this system, how are they managing the clover after they harvest the wheat? Is it just a green manure, or are they grazing it? And then what other crops do they have in the rotation?
One grower that I've worked with the past 2 years in a study is a winter wheat grower, and he, at least this year, the clover, it was a heavy clay soil, and the clover did really well. It did too well. It got too tall, and I know he was considering chopping it as forage. I think it's still such a small community of people that actually are growing wheat in Vermont, and I can't say that there's a consistent trend of what people are doing, but certainly has potential. It's putting a lot of biomass for plowing under. But it could be grazed. It's certainly over a foot tall in the cases that I've seen by the time the wheat's coming off. So.
Yes.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of literature about tillage. For example, the more grain residue that's on the surface is just hosting, if conditions are favorable, it's hosting Fusarium species. Corn, wheat, barley, rye all can host. So tillage is an issue. The more you till, or the deeper you till, it's often shown to reduce disease levels. But again, a lot of these, I didn't go into the life cycle of the disease, but it's a wind-blown disease as well as a rain splash kind of dispersal. So cultural practice can do some things, but there are no resistant varieties, and spores can blow in from Kansas to the Northeast. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but.
Thank you, John.